Fondly known as the sensible psychologist, Dr. Kerry Johansson brings effective, proven techniques to help people navigate the inevitable ups and downs of life. Dr. Kerry is the author of Self-Help on the Go, because you are not broken, but life gets tricky sometimes. Dr. Kerry, welcome to the Resilience Podcast. Delighted to have you here.
Very delighted to be here. I'm so happy to be able to speak to your audience and have a nice conversation with you.
Absolutely. So for those who haven't encountered your work, and they will soon, there are links in the show notes, perhaps you could tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do.
Awesome. My name is Dr. Kerry Johansson. Although I very rarely use my last name. Most people just sort of know me as Dr. Kerry, the sensible psychologist. So I'm the one who helps people figure out how to navigate those, like, you know how life is inevitably up and down. And my job and my mission in the world is to help people enjoy life, even though it isn't perfect and it is inevitably up and down. So I've worked in private practice for 22 years and specialize in treating anxiety and trauma. I love what I do.
Amazing, amazing. And what attracted you to work in this field?
In the field in general, I've always felt really called to help people, and especially to help people enjoy themselves and enjoy the world a little bit more. I think we spend so much time and energy talking about what is wrong, what's broken, what's wrong with you, what's wrong with me. And frankly, I like enjoying life more than that. So I think there's a lot of beauty and wonderful connections and opportunities that are available in the world. But I feel like we have made a real mistake recently, especially in the self-help literature, in teaching people, first of all, that they're broken and that there is something that they have to fix. And second of all, that if they just fix themselves well enough, that they're going to end up with a problem-free life. And that is pure rubbish. So then what happens is people fix and fix and fix, and they feel increasingly more terrible about themselves. And then they end up feeling like failures because inevitably life is going to hand them problems to solve.
That's an interesting perspective. A lot of people do adopt the mindset of perpetual fixing. There is always something else to do. And I guess it can lead you ultimately to feel a little bit empty.
Yeah. Empty and like you're doing something wrong, right? Like somehow, somewhere, somebody has an answer and they have a perfect life. And if you just worked harder, or had more money, or had less of this, or had more of that, then you'd have a perfect life too, and everything would be fine. But no one ever gets to the perfect life. And that's the key, is figuring that out. Once you figure that out, then you can have a lot more fun with life in all of its iterations.
So it's kind of the hedonic treadmill. We keep thinking that through things or learning or whatever it might be, I'll ultimately feel fulfilled. But there's more to it than that. Sometimes it's about navigating your way through the journey with a growth mindset or being more flexible.
Exactly. And sometimes it's also even simpler than that. It's enjoying yourself for who you are, without constantly trying to make yourself into someone else.
That's an important differentiation, absolutely. One of the areas that you specialize in is psychological flexibility. Perhaps you could unpack that concept for us.
Absolutely. I call psychological flexibility a fancy name for a really simple concept. The basic definition of psychological flexibility is that you work with what you actually have. You manage your emotions and you figure out what's working well and what's working poorly and make adjustments and choices accordingly. So what this looks like in real life is that instead of waiting until you lose the 10 pounds or get the boyfriend or dump the wife or your kids graduate from college or you have kids or fill in the blank with whatever the thing is that you feel like if you can just get there, you're going to feel good. And instead, you look around your life and you do an assessment of what you actually have. What's reality actually giving you? And in working with that is where you have the most power. And paradoxically, you have the most choice. Because when we get all rigid and narrow and tight and tense and contracted, we really have very limited options. And as soon as we start working with what we do have, then choices open up, even if sometimes the choices aren't necessarily where you want to be, right? Like there's still places that you want to get to, but in working with what you really have right now in the moment, it's always a more empowered place than waiting for something else to happen.
So how could someone open up that kind of presence required to take stock of, you know, where am I right now in my journey? What are some tools or tips for that process?
Yeah. So I call it doing an assessment.
Okay.
And it's interesting because the assessment often happens the best by starting with safety. So this is going to sound cheesy, but it's actually really effective for our nervous systems. Like if you actually right now, as you're watching this podcast, take a minute and look around your environment. Are you pretty safe? And most of the time, the answer is yes, which incidentally, if you're not safe, don't be listening to the podcast, right? But the interesting thing is humans are running on very outdated software. So our software used to be designed for us to be out in the wild, right? Where we had few, but extraordinarily significant safety issues. So we had major weather to contend with, a warring tribe to contend with, the pack of wolves to the north, the bears to the south, right? Whatever, in whatever landscape you were. And you needed to pay attention to those, right? But at the same time that you needed to pay attention to these big, grave, life-threatening threats, you were walking miles and miles a day. You were probably living in a more tribal, more communal situation, and beauty was all around you. Now, I live in Denver, Colorado. Now, if you want to get to the mountains and be in a field of wildflowers, first of all, it's a little tough to walk to, right? And because you're going to drive to it. And then you have to actually plan time and energy to get to the beauty. But stressors are everywhere. I don't know if you've driven in Denver lately, but I-25 traffic feels like a grave threat. It's actually secretly just an inconvenience, but we process it like a threat, right? So we're getting dumped all this stress and we aren't getting soft beauty all around. We have to really look for it. So slowing down and actually checking in with safety is one of the best places to start, because most often the answer is, actually, I'm pretty safe. And now you can't get to 100%, right? Like I can't guarantee that an airplane isn't going to crash through my window right now. Probability is probably pretty low. Mm-hmm. But you get to like, no, I'm pretty safe right now. And let that sink into your nervous system. And then, again, now take an emotional look around. How are you feeling? What's going well? What's going poorly? And actually do that assessment instead of just be in judgment. So most of the time when folks think they're doing an assessment, they're actually just beating themselves up. So an assessment is, oh, I'm sleeping pretty well, but you know, I'm probably having too much sugar. And gosh, you know, that conversation with my mom, boss, brother, spouse didn't go very well the other day. That's an assessment. Judgment is, I'm fat. I suck at friendships. I hate this about myself. I hate this about this other person, right? Like those are all judgments. Judgments, again, make us narrow and contracted. Assessment gives us options, partially because we're looking at what is working and what isn't working. Does this make sense?
Oh, it makes sense. And you described that idea of our software being out of date so eloquently. I really like that idea of, you know, we've got this hardware, but the software is designed for a different environment. And so we have all of these stressors in our upgraded environment. And you're exactly right. We do cast a lot of judgments. Like, this is bad. This is good. I can't. All of these types of, and they trigger these primal responses. So perhaps you could tell us a little bit more. I'm guessing it's shades of fight, flight, freeze responses.
It's shades of that. And it's also, you know, one of the things when we're in fight or flight is our reactions actually narrow quite deliberately to keep us safe in that moment. I was telling this story the other day. This happened a long time ago. I was walking down a dirt road, and to my right was a yard with like a waist high chain link fence. And all of a sudden in front of me, careening around this corner, is a car, and it is coming straight towards me. I don't know if they can see me or not see me. They're totally out of control. They like drifted all the way around the corner and they are screaming down this road. And all of a sudden I find myself on the other side of the chain link fence. I didn't think about it. There was definitely no assessment. I didn't think about it. I just reacted and I got myself to safety. Now, all of a sudden I realize, oh snap, I'm in someone's front yard that I don't know. I have no idea. Are Dobermans going to come and get me right now? Right? Like the car missed me. This is good. But did I jump from the frying pan into the fire? Possibly. And, you know, it was so interesting because that wasn't such an acute reaction. It took me like a millisecond to get over the fence. I actually don't even remember getting over the fence. I know I got over the fence because I was physically on the other side of it. But getting back over the fence, oh my gosh, that was so awkward and clumsy. And I sort of splatted on my face, you know? And so it was so interesting. Those are like, that's when we need our options narrowed. Yeah. We don't need to be so myopic when we are fielding the typical problems of life, but we often react in the same way. So it's important to roll back and to get into deliberately handling things and slowing down and softening your responses so that you're not running at that like Mach 10 stress level all the time.
Makes sense. So you've done your assessment, and for people, any tips for what to tune into? Because some people, you know, even introspection in this way is something quite new. Even just sitting down for a moment without a phone is quite a new experience. So what should they look out for? Is it thoughts, feelings, physical sensations? What would you recommend?
All of the above. And it's also being okay with labeling what's going on. So, I'll use a silly example. I have terrible hand-eye coordination. This is a factual assessment. This is not me beating myself up. I am left eye dominant, but right-handed. So balls come to me and I just miss them, right? Like I have terrible hand-eye coordination. This is a true story. I used to tell myself that I was a bad athlete. I used to tell myself that I was, and then feel really kind of discouraged about it, right? And so there was this big mixture of feelings about athletics and sports and all this stuff. And I then also narrowed my future options, right? Like, well, I have no hand-eye coordination, true story. I have no hand-eye coordination. That means I can never have any hand-eye coordination, untrue story. I'm not an athlete, really? Aren't there a lot of different sports in the world, right? This discouragement I'm feeling is keeping me stuck and immobile. That's not such a cool response, right? So the assessment is slowing down and like what portion is true, even if it's negative, right? Maybe you actually don't like your job. Maybe your boss actually is a jerk. Maybe you're in truly a bad relationship. Maybe your kid really is in trouble. So acknowledging the reality, even if it's negative, and then from there, noticing what the feelings are, noticing the stories that you're telling yourself, and then you start poking at those a little bit. And from there, then you can figure out what's your next best move. What are your options and what's your next best move?
Makes a lot of sense. How important is that storytelling aspect, because I think people weave stories over the course of their life to try and add meaning or to try and explain why this happened to me or us. And how important is it to be able to just fact check those stories? And any insights on, you know, why do we create all of these stories around what happens to us?
Oh, well, our brains are so sweet. They're meaning-making machines. We want to know what things mean. We're meaning-making machines. It's literally our, it's quite literally back to that idea of programming. It's literally our programming. And so, but so holding it a little bit more loosely, right? Open palm holding it instead of holding it so tight. But holding that loosely is my brain tells me things, my thoughts. My thoughts tell me stories. Sometimes they're even true, right? That's that holding it loosely. Sometimes it's even true. Sometimes it's not. And so it's an act of bravery to start looking at the stories and to decide, is that true? Is that sometimes true? Did that used to be true, but it isn't true anymore? Is that true? And I'd like to change it, right? So you can start flexing and playing with the stories and stretching them out. And again, this notion of psychological flexibility, it's an overall easygoing approach. It's having some trust in yourself and trusting that you can actually flex and play with things, right? And knowing when you have that option and when you don't. Like the example of the car coming towards me, psychological flexibility was not the right move. Mm. Getting to safety immediately was the right move. So sometimes, yes. Sometimes we don't want to tease and play with the story. Sometimes we just need to like get out of a bad situation. But a lot of times our stories are actually a big piece of what's keeping us stuck.
Yes. You don't want to try and understand the meaning of the car racing towards you. Just get out of the way.
No, just get out of the way.
And maybe later on, you add some meaning to the situation to say, well, I was protected by a higher power or, you know, and whatever, that's all well and good.
Or,
or perhaps a much less useful story would be, this always happens to me, some kind of thinking trap.
Right.
And then we're caught in those loops again. So someone takes some time, they do an assessment, they start to fact check their stories. Before we go further, how would you recommend someone allocate space for this activity? Because in our busy, busy worlds full of distraction, finding a few moments to actually just stop can even be a challenge for some.
Yep. And so this can be a more lengthy activity that takes, you know, conscious effort and set aside time and write it in a journal and all of that stuff. But sometimes you can actually do it on the fly. I was using the example recently, not to use two car examples, but I'm going to use two car examples. I was recently on vacation in San Diego. I was on vacation. It was a work trip for my husband. And we got a rental car and the rental car was just crummy, right? Like it drove poorly and it sort of had this weird stop and start sensation to it. It was just a strange, it just wasn't a great, you know, a great car. And I'm thinking like, this isn't a great car, but it'll be fine. We're only here for a few days. It's no big deal. And then about a quarter of a mile before we got to where we were staying, our little VBRO, a sign comes on the dash about that big on the dashboard that says, I can't remember if it's a total or complete, but some very alarming word like complete. And then the next two words were vehicle and malfunction. And then all of the safety lights on the dashboard light up.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Right. And the car's still moving, but it feels like you're driving a car that's about to run out of gas, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so fortunately, we're really close to where we were staying and we get to pull over and park and I take a picture of the dashboard and we call the rental car company And so here's where it's psychological flexibility on the fly. Here's what I wanted to do with my afternoon. Here's what we're doing now, right? I'm on vacation. I was all excited to like take a walk on the beach with my husband before he had to go to his work meeting and like we had plans. Nope. Reality is we have a problem with the rental car. And then I had an expectation of how the rental car would handle it. I'm like, well, it's your car that's malfunctioning. I did nothing wrong. You're going to bring me a new car, right? Wrong. No. It's evidently not how it works. So all of a sudden, and the rental car company is priceless because they're like, well, you know, you need to come in and exchange the car. Can you drive the car to the airport to exchange? And I'm like, oh no, I will not be driving that car another foot. Like, no, I will not be driving the car anywhere. And so they sent a tow. And you know, all of this takes time, right? So this walk on the beach that I wanted to do, it's blown. And now I have an invitation from reality. Do I want to have a meltdown? Do I want to have a tantrum? Do I want to be pissed? Do I want to be upset? Do I want to ignore it and avoid it? Like, there's all of these options that are getting handed to me in the moment. Working with what is the baseline of psychological flexibility. What is that what I want to do is different than what I need to do in this moment. What I want to have happen is not one of my options. So my husband has to be at a work meeting. He can't miss it. So he's unfortunately unable to be the person who's helping with this particular calamity. Very minor calamity, really. So I hop in the car with the tow truck driver. And once again, I think like, oh, well, he's going to drop me off. We'll trade the car. No big deal. Well, evidently where tow truck drivers bring cars is different from where you rent cars. So we're going to the wrecker lot. So we get to the wrecker lot, which is through like a gate and there's codes and there's all this stuff. And we get to the wrecker lot and the owner of the wrecker lot comes over and looks at me and he looks at the tow truck driver. He goes, you brought her with you? What's she doing in the car? And the tow truck driver goes, well, she needs to get a different rental car. And the owner of the wrecker lot's like, well, we don't have a shuttle. And so again, psychological flexibility in the moment. Check in, am I safe? I'm safe. I'm inconvenienced. These guys are nice. My husband knows where I am. I'm safe. And oops, what I thought was going to happen is different than what's really happening. So those opportunities come sometimes when you least expect them. In all of my years of traveling, I've never had a rental car malfunction. Yes. So that psychological flexibility concept, sometimes you need to use it on the fly. I didn't need to journal to know that throwing a tantrum wouldn't be very helpful. And yelling at the person at the rental car agency was not going to move me any closer to getting a car exchange. Right? So I might as well be good natured about it and call it an adventure. And then the story that I'm telling myself, I'm choosing the story, which is this is an adventure. Who knew? Who knew that exactly. You got to go to a record line?
Yeah.
Right?
Never been to one of those before. Might be quite interesting.
Never been to one of those before. And so then you can have some fun, right?
Yeah.
And then you can be in that easygoing, flexible, resilient space. Where instead of a problem totally grounding you and crashing you, the problem becomes a fun puzzle to figure out or a fun adventure. So, you know, all of these pieces and at each step of the way of this particular problem, I had the opportunity to get into a difficult storyline or to try and enjoy and connect with the people who I got to connect with. right? Each really one of the people that I connected with was really cool on this little journey.
Yeah, and they might not have been if you had chosen to write a different story.
Exactly. Yeah, if I came in all entitled or all bossy or all cranky, I'm quite sure I would have been received very differently.
When you reflect back on that experience, it's probably not a disaster or a trauma or, you know, it's something that happened on a day. Did you end up getting a walk on the beach?
You know what's funny? We didn't end up getting to walk on the beach on the entire trip. We got to walk on a pier, but we never got, my little paws didn't get to touch the beach. It was very sad.
I really like what you said about it's an invitation from reality. That's such a nice way to look at it. So reality has invited me into an unexpected journey. And it's up to you whether you fight it or ride it or, just engage with it. It's up to you. And that's the foundation of whether you're going to experience a stressful situation or a distressing situation or an adventure.
Right. And I don't know that people always understand. This is a piece of why I started doing speaking and training, because I was really excited to reach more people at a time than just one-on-one therapy. I love one-on-one therapy and really ready to reach more people at a time. Because some of this information is actually really simple. But most of us don't know. We think that if our brains tell us a story, it must be true and it must be important. If we're feeling strongly about something, we probably should do something about it. A lot of times we feel strongly about something, and if we just give it a few minutes, that feeling subsides. So we have more choice over what we do with our thoughts and feelings than we give ourselves credit for. And we also have much less choice over what thoughts and feelings arise than we think we do. So we think we can control and not feel anxious or not feel guilty or not feel mad. We can't really control either the feelings that arise or the thoughts that come. What we can do is control our response to them. And once we have that knowledge, holy cow, resilience is easy to achieve.
Reminds me of the quote by Viktor Frankl, which I'm sure you know, which is between stimulus and response, there is a space. And in that space lies our freedom to choose.
Yes.
It's about actually deliberately creating that space, observing the options and making a choice, because we can all fold and crumple and have an outburst or cry, but we don't want to make that a habit. And something I wanted to ask you about is chronic stress as a habit, because I've spoken to executives who say, well, I've practiced so much stress that when I'm not stressed, I feel stressed because I should be. Now that is a crazy loop. What are your thoughts?
Yeah. Well, and a piece of that means my guess is that they're running so hard and they're dumping so many stress chemicals into their bodies all the time that when they do relax, they actually will often probably get sick.
Yes.
These are the folks who they finally go out on a date with their spouse and they get into a rip-roaring fight.
Yep.
Right? You go on vacation and you get sick. You go on vacation and you twist your ankle, right? Because you're running so tense all the time. When you try and relax, you don't actually know how to do it very skillfully. So this is where you want to balance. You want to balance your effort a little bit better, and you want to start attending to deliberately calming and soothing your nervous system so that then when you go out with your spouse, you can have a conversation instead of explode, right? When you go on vacation, you're actually allowed to rest instead of your body being like, oh, finally, you're not doing 10,000 things. So we're going to just take you all the way out.
Yeah, exactly. That's one of the tips I gave to executives last, before the holiday break, was don't wait for the first day of holiday to relax. Start practicing a bit of relaxation now so that your body doesn't get shocked by this sudden space. it's such a common thing that the immune system comes back online and says, wow, we've got an opportunity now to flare up and inflame you. Interesting. Humans develop some strange patterns, don't we? I'm interested to find out more about your book. So the book is called Self-Help on the Go, because you are not broken, but life gets tricky. Tell me a little bit more about the book.
Well, this is the book that my clients asked me to write. They kept coming in and very generously handing me 200 and 300 page self-help books. And they're like, I don't want to read 200 pages about anger management. I just need to know what happens the next time so-and-so is a jerk, right? And so the book is 10 chapters on 10 different topics. So most self-help books are one topic.
Yes.
I think most of us experience multiple things at a time, right? Like, we might struggle with anxiety, but also have difficulty communicating and be fielding stress, right? So there's chapters on all three of those things. And each chapter has 10 tips in it, most of which you can use right in the instant that you pick it up and read it. And the book is designed to be read in tiny little chunks where you're reading a tip or two at a time, not from cover to cover.
Excellent. I'm looking at the outline now, and I really like the sequence of part one, feel better. And this is about calming your nerves, beating the blues, knocking out anger. Maybe you could tell us a little bit more. What are some tips for one of our listeners, or many of our listeners who are tuned in, who are saying, yeah, I would actually like to feel better?
Yeah. So depression, anxiety, and anger are three, and we can call it sadness. Depression is actually a clinical term, but sadness, anxiety, and anger are three of our most common, what we consider to be negative emotions. Just like any emotion, they come and they go. But these three in particular, people are often insisting that they stop feeling them, right? So they will first of all own them, my anxiety. And second of all, they will say that they can't do all sorts of things in their world because of my anxiety. And so the book is built foundationally on the principle of psychological flexibility. So the first thing we do is get a little space in there. So anxiety is sometimes making a hostile takeover. Anxiety is outside. You are here. Anxiety is outside of you. And now let's wrestle with and manage it. And managing anxiety, sadness, anger, and any of the more difficult emotions is a practice of managing them, not eradicating them. So a piece of this acceptance of reality is that sometimes you're going to feel anxious. That's okay, right? Sometimes you're going to get mad. That's okay. Sometimes you're going to lose your temper. And maybe you're going to feel bad about it later. That's okay. All of us lose our temper. I teach this stuff all day long and occasionally lose my temper, feel unreasonably anxious, feel sad for no reason, right? Like, all of these things happen because they're part of the human experience. So it's not about eradicating them. It's about managing them. And there's 30 tips in that first section, 10 for anxiety, 10 for sadness, 10 for anger.
I think that's such an important section. What are your thoughts before we talk about the second part of the book about this anxiety epidemic, especially amongst young people? Any thoughts on why this is occurring? And particularly if you have teenage kids, what can we do? Or do we need to do anything? Will they find their way?
Oh, I have so many thoughts on this.
Oh, excellent.
some of which aren't very popular, which is that we have to actually give our kids a lot more systematically trained grit and resilience. So instead of telling kids that they are the most amazing thing, they can do anything, you can do whatever, you know, all of these things. Everyone who participates in a sport wins a trophy because everyone is the same. We are actually all incredibly unique. We all have unique strengths and weaknesses. Slowing down and being real about what your strengths and weaknesses actually are is powerful and cool and a good thing to do. And then if you have a weakness that you don't like, most strengths and weaknesses are actually skills-based, and you can learn how to do them better. Now, you also need to work with reality. If we go back to my hand-eye coordination example, I am never going to be Michael Jordan. First of all, I am colossally too short. And second of all, I am massively too uncoordinated. So that realistic approach to like, but how do you work with your strengths, right? Like, okay, Carrie, hand-eye coordination, being a professional athlete, not going to be your bag. What are you great at? Let's talk about what you're great at. And it doesn't have to be the same as anybody else. And it can't be the same as anybody else because you are you. So this teaching kids to really have some insight into what they're great at instead of generically telling them that they're amazing, and then letting them actually handle things. So instead of handling every conflict for them, it's trusting and giving them the tools, obviously, and then trusting that they've got it, which is terrifying as a parent and vitally important to do. So you've got this is a way better thing to say than I'm so sorry, I'll make sure that never happens again, right? Bubble wrap just actually makes our kids more fragile. You've got this, trust, faith, tools, all that moves them forward in the world in a much stronger position.
I really like that. And this could work, this kind of strengths audit could work even for a 9-year-old. My daughter is 9.5. There are areas where she's amazing, creativity, writing, reading, but assertiveness is a bit of an issue. And sometimes she'll go along and you have this feeling like, okay, I'll help you out. I don't, but you want to. However, maybe writing down all of the things you're good at, you're so good at these things that where you would like to improve, these three, what could help you improve? And then figure it out. I mean, even that gives a level of self-awareness.
Yeah. And also figuring out, you know, most of the time we used to have conversations about how strengths and weaknesses were often a flip side of the same coin, right? Mm. Maybe her lack of assertiveness makes her a better listener, makes her more empathic, makes her, like be able to be more flexible. And then where does she figure out that all of a sudden it's getting her to be treated like a doormat and that's no fun, right? So where is that a strength and where is it maybe something that we could work on?
Yeah, that makes sense. And then I love that idea of when reality throws up an invitation, you get to choose whether you are going to allow someone else to make your decisions for you or if you go on another pathway. That's flexibility.
And it's choice. Very nice. So all of a sudden she's empowered to decide, no, I'm going to hang back on this one and do what they're doing. Interestingly, I'm going on a trip coming up in the next few weeks and it's not my trip. I'm going along. I'm part of a group and my role isn't to be the one in charge. And so I haven't actually gone online and figured out all the places and am going to really, demand that we go here, there, everywhere, right? Like my job on this trip is actually to be kind of in the background and to enjoy being in the background. And so sometimes, right, like lack of assertiveness is fabulous. Now, if we're on the trip and somebody wants to do something that I think is a terrible idea or violates my values or whatever, like that's where I can set a firm line of like, oh no, not for me.
Yeah, I like that. What about the section called Find Your Center? What is your center and how can you find it?
So your center in that section, I'm talking a lot about how we know ourselves a little better, how we communicate, how we interact with other people, managing stress, those sorts of things. So the first section is really about emotions. The second section is about understanding yourself enough. And then that third section is about now, how do you take all this and move forward? How do you move towards what you want in the world? And how do you deal with moving towards what you want when you're actually in partnership or you are, you know, interacting with other people in the world. So kind of building on, like, first, let's identify our emotions and manage them a little better without demanding that they go away. Second, let's know ourselves a little better and get more skillful about how we show up in our worlds. And then third, how do we move forward?
Excellent. And of course, not everyone is ready for this journey. I guess it's you say you've got a friend and you think you could really benefit from psychological flexibility. Any tips for how to communicate this to them without pushing them away and them saying, oh, you're always trying to throw self-development stuff at me, or you're trying to make me listen to your podcast? Or do they have to discover it for themselves?
So sometimes they can discover it for themselves, but kind of one of the easiest ways is, instead of trying to rescue someone by telling them or bully them, right? Bullying them is like, you should do this. I know better than you what's going on with you. Nope, that's actually you being a bully. Or rescuing them. I know better than you what's going on with you, and here's the magical solution, right? So getting out of both of those modes and instead being in a champion mode. You've got this. And sometimes a challenger mode. Hey, this thing that you're doing, it's really destructive. It's hard to watch. But asking permission is sometimes very helpful. I was listening to this wonderful podcast. They were talking about this concept. I thought it was kind of cool. Do you want to hear about it? Sure, is typically the answer. And then you can talk about it. And then you can teach each other about it. And then it's a thing that you're joining on, and you're having fun joining on it, instead of being in like, well, you should do this. The pointy finger conversation almost never works.
What about someone who is stuck in that cycle of victimhood? And I say this, I have been there in my own life. Oh, yep. Life is out to get me. I have to work late at night again. It's so terrible. And I came to a conclusion some time ago, thankfully, that this was not serving at all. So I'd rather become the protagonist in my story and say,
yes,
well, tonight there's a meeting. It's not going away. I may as well be the best version of myself in that meeting. And it is so liberating to overcome that. But any thoughts from your perspective, how can people adjust their thinking from that being in victim mode?
Well, the opposite of victim mode is what I call creative choice. So it's especially when you feel like life is happening to you. And again, this is really important to understand. This happens to all of us. Literally, I teach this all day long and occasionally feel like life is happening to me and I don't like it and I want a rescue, right? Or I start bullying myself. You know, I can't believe you're doing this. This is so, you know, blah, 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 negative self-talk. So the trick is to get into choice, but this actually goes back to that concept of psychological flexibility, where when you're in victim mode, the primary question tends to be, why me? Right? And it tends to be judgment, filled with judgment and comparison. Bad things are happening to me. They aren't happening to someone else. You know, I would only feel okay if this stops happening. That's all, again, you're wrestling with reality. When you're in choice, even if you're choosing between not very fun choices, you are actually saying the primary question becomes, what's my next best move? What are my options here? Right? So if you're in a job and you're working late too much and it's really hard, instead of saying like, oh, this is so terrible, this is always happening, right? It's like, hang on a minute. I'm in a job where I'm working more than I want to. What are my options? And sometimes the option is, I don't have any options because I need this job because I have to pay off X, Y, or Z. Sometimes, but even just knowing that you're choosing it will help decrease stress. Yeah. And sometimes your answer can be, wait a minute, I'm in a job where I'm working really late. I could ask my boss if I could come in late since I'm working late. I could decline the meeting. I could reschedule it. I could look for a new job. So sometimes we actually have more options than we give ourselves choice with, especially if we're telling ourselves a story that we have no options at all. Very rarely do we have no options.
That's very true. And if you do have, if you've chosen this and it's the only option, as you said, well, commit to it and accept it and just keep moving.
Yep.
Otherwise, you'll languish in some form of distress when you potentially don't have to, rather just accept and commit. That's that's the way. Mm. What inspires you? You mentioned the field of flowers, walking on the beach. I'm wondering if spending time in nature is important to you, and perhaps you would recommend that for others.
It is nature's soother, healer, medicine. I just think being outside is the best, partially because it means that you don't have a phone in your face, right? Our phones are actually very bad for our brains. They aren't great in lots of ways. They're lovely and, you know, helpful in other ways, but they are systematically eroding our sense of ourselves, and they tend to make us feel like we have limited options, in part because the algorithms are designed to only show us things that agree with the last thing that we looked up, right? So when you're outside, you get, oftentimes being outside is like a trifecta. You're outside, you're getting fresh air, you're getting sunshine. Lots of times you're moving your body. Lots of times you do it with other people. All of those things activate our play response. Play is inherently flexible, right? Play is fun. You don't know what's going to happen next. You can have some wiggle room. You can change the rules. You can be in your body. All of those things help our brains, help us feel more resilient, help us feel more empowered in ourselves. Critically important.
That's a great message. Who inspires you?
Oh my gosh. So many people inspire me. I am, this is going to sound cheesy, but I really, truly, deeply mean it. My clients inspire me so much. They come in, they share really rough stories. They've had very difficult challenges in their lives, and they come in ready to face and move and improve. And it is the most humbling, fantastic thing to be a part of watching them progress.
Wonderful. What would you like people to do? How can they get in touch with you? Of course, there are links in the show notes, but what would you like our audience to do if they're interested?
The easiest thing to do is to go head over to my website. It's called selfhelponthego.com. It's the same as the title of my book. That gives you an opportunity to check out examples of my speaking. If you want to hear other podcasts and other speaking, public speaking engagements I've been on, you can check those out. If you are more of a reader and you like the written word, I have a blog over there that is filled with tips and tricks about how to put psychological flexibility into practice.
Thank you, Dr. Carrie. It has been a very insightful conversation. I've enjoyed very much. I will listen to it again. I love the way that you describe some of these situations and challenges that we all encounter in our life. The invitation from reality is one that's definitely going to stick. I love that. Any final thoughts for our listeners?
Just what a pleasure. I'm so happy to be here and spreading the word about you being able to believe in yourself and having more choice in the world. It's supposed to be fun, folks. It's supposed to be fun.
Thank you so much, Dr. Carrie. And thank you all for tuning in. I'll see you in the next episode.